Does truth exist?
Because you have faith, does that make this book true?
Does God exist?
So when someone says there is no truth, if you apply the claim to itself, what should you say? Is that true?
They don't think Christianity's true.
They're talked out of it. You know why they're talked out of it? Because they've never been talked into it.
Cross-examining skeptical and atheistic views. Welcome to Cross-Examine with Dr. Frank Turek.
Ladies and gentlemen, when you're in a conversation with somebody and it turns to a spiritual issue or a question or an objection to Christianity, there really can be a lot to remember. It can be where you're overwhelmed. You don't really know what to do or what to say or where to go when somebody brings up something that's an objection to Christianity or an objection to your worldview or an objection to the Bible or an objection to God. Well, we have put together a resource that we hope, and it's free, by the way, that we hope you will use when you're interacting with other people. And it's the Cross-Examined app. And today I want to talk about some questions and answers that we have in this quick answer section of this new application, which you can get at our website, crossexamine.org. You click on media and you click on Cross-Examine app, and whether you have an iPhone, iPad, or a Droid device, you'll find the app right there on the website, or it'll lead you to where you can download it. And what we've done is we've put quick answers to tough questions about Christianity in this particular app. So if you're out having lunch with somebody and they say something that just doesn't sound right or something that's against Christianity, you don't have to have everything memorized. You can just take out your iPhone, your Droid, your iPad, whatever you got, and see if the objection they brought up is in this quick answer section. Now, chances are it will be because you tend to get the same objections over and over again. They're very common objections to Christianity and God and the Bible out there. And so we've tried to put the most common ones in this app, and we're not done doing it. We're going to add a lot more to it. We've just released it. But there are some very common objections in here that you can answer quite quickly and quite easily by just taking out your iPhone or your iPad. Let's just go through a few of these. And if you have one that you'd like to bring up today on the program, that's not a problem. You can call us at 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. And this Quick Answers app is just that. It's designed to give you quick answers. It's not going to go into an incredible amount of depth. It's to give you an answer in a paragraph or two, and then it'll provide a link or a video or some other resource that you can go to get more information. So let's just take a look at some of these objections that you get. And we've divided this thing into four basic sections. There's the truth section. Those are objections that you get. You know, there is no truth. All truth is relative. There are no absolutes. It all depends on your perspective. You ought not judge. You know, those common objections we hear in a postmodern society. The next section is the God and miracle section. So that's when you get objections to, you know, to God. Does he even exist? Or objections to the fact that miracles don't happen or they don't happen today. Those kind of objections are in the God section. The third section is the Bible section. We're building that one out right now. There's a few objections in there, but we're going to build it out to a much more robust level here as we go on. But that's when you get questions like, well, how can we trust the Bible? Or didn't the Bible writers have an agenda? Or what about the lost gospels? Those types of objections. And then the fourth section are the objections you get that all begin with the letter E. And there are four of them. We only have three of them in the app right now, but there are four of them. The first E is the fact that you'll get an objection related to evolution or creation, the whole evolution-creation debate. Or you'll get an objection regarding evil, you know, if God, why evil? Or you get an objection regarding ethics, for example, say, homosexuality or something. It's very popular now in our society to say there's nothing wrong with homosexual behavior. And so, you know, how do you answer a question like that? Or an ethical question in the Bible. What about the Canaanites? Why did God kill the Canaanites? Or what about the Bible and slavery? Those types of issues are in the ethics section. And the fourth section in the fourth E is eternity. I get questions about eternity. We haven't added that yet, but we'll put it in the app. That's when you get questions like this. Well, what about those who have never heard? Or will God send me to hell just because I don't believe in Jesus? Or questions along eternity. You know, why would God punish people in hell? Those kinds of questions. So when you look at truth, God, miracles, and the Bible, that's the positive case for Christianity. There is truth. Does God exist? Miracles are possible. The New Testament writers and the Bible writers are telling you the truth. And then the objections, the four E's, evolution, evil, ethics, and eternity. This app has quick questions and answers to these things. And it's designed to allow you to have these answers at your fingertips. And we've almost had 5,000 downloads since we released this a few weeks ago. So people are finding it very helpful. So I encourage you to download it. Again, it's free. And this isn't the only section on the app, by the way. There's a podcast section. So this very radio program you're listening to right now, or podcast you're listening to right now, is accessed through the app. So you don't need to hunt on a radio station to find this thing, or you don't need to go on the internet. You can have it right here on the app. And it's got our events on there. It's got our blog on there. It's got many other features on the app. So I highly encourage you to get the app. But let's just start with truth. Let's go through some of these issues that we deal with the question of truth. And before we do, I need to reiterate something. There's the very first question we have here is not really a question. It's a request to begin with questions. We've talked about this on the program before. But when somebody brings up an objection or someone makes a statement, it is not your job to refute the objection or refute the statement. It is that person's job to support the statement or the objection. And that's why we encourage you to ask some questions. And this is from Greg Kokel's book, Tactics, which we've talked about many times on this program before. The three questions are this. If somebody says something that you think is wrong, you ask them a question. The first question is, what do you mean by that? So, for example, somebody said, well, actually, I'll give you an example here in a minute. Let me just give you the question. So, the first question is, what do you mean by that? The second question is, how did you come to that conclusion? Like, why? What evidence do you have for this statement or claim or objection you're bringing up? Because I can almost guarantee you, friends, most people who have these objections to Christianity don't really have evidence for these objections. They've just heard a slogan, and they've adopted the slogan, and they think the slogan is true, even though they don't have any evidence for it. And if you ask them, you know, how did you come to that conclusion, or what evidence do you have for that? Chances are they're probably going to be pretty lost when it comes to defending that point of view. So just by asking the question, you've already advanced the ball. And then finally, the last question, after you ask, what do you mean by that and how did you come to that conclusion, is, have you ever considered, and then it's your opportunity to fill in the blank after that, have you ever considered this particular argument? It's a nice way of you providing counter evidence back. So let's just do one of these. If somebody says something like, do you believe in evolution? What should your first question be? Well, what do you mean by evolution? Because evolution can mean a lot of things. You know, it can mean change over time. Well, of course I believe in change over time. It can mean microevolution. Well, of course I believe in microevolution. But if it means macroevolution, if it means that all life forms have come from one ancestral being, whatever that was, some common ancestor, and they've all evolved through natural selection and mutation without intelligent intervention, no, I don't believe in that. You'd have to give me some evidence for that. But the first two I believe in. Second question is, how'd you come to that conclusion? And here's what the app says. By asking this question, you're asking for evidence. Much of the time, you'll find that people aren't relying on evidence, but on a slogan or a popular opinion. When people realize they can't back up their claims, they have taken the first step toward reconsidering their beliefs. In other words, before somebody's going to adopt your belief system, they might have to doubt their own belief system. Why should they give up their belief system if they think it's true to adopt yours? They're first going to have to doubt their own. And that's why asking, how did you come to that conclusion, starts the process of the person beginning to question their own beliefs. Now, if you'd like to bring up a question on the program, give us a call, 1-888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. I'm Frank Turk. You're listening to Cross Examined with Frank Turk on the AFR Talk Radio Network. We're talking about the app today. You need to get it. Back in 2 minutes. Don't touch that. Great to have Jim back in the studio. For those of you that don't know, Jim does a lot there at American Family Radio, and he is in the studio right now. So if you're calling in, let the phone ring. He's a one-man band right now trying to answer the phones, and the lines are about filled up. We're at 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. We're talking about quick answers to tough questions about Christianity, and we have a new app Cross Examined does. If you go to the App Store and type in Cross Examined, two words, you'll find it. Or you can go to our website, crossexamined.org. Click on media. You'll see the Cross Examine app tab there, and it'll take you right where you need to go to get the app for your iPhone, your iPad, your Droid device, whatever it is, so you can have answers at your fingertips. Let me go back to what I was just speaking about, the questions that you ought to ask when somebody makes a statement. When someone makes a statement, the first question you want to ask is, what do you mean by that? Next question is, how did you come to that conclusion? Or you might want to say, what evidence do you have for that? And the third question is an opportunity for you to provide evidence back. So if somebody says something and you think there's evidence to counter that, after you've asked them for your evidence, you might say, have you ever considered? And we were talking about this issue of evolution a minute ago. Here's what the app says. Have you ever considered, well, let me back it up, because quite frequently the argument given for macroevolution is we have a common genetic code. You know, everything shares a common genetic code. And quite frankly, that could be evidence of a common ancestor. There's no question about it. That certainly could be evidence of a common ancestor. But there's another possible interpretation of that evidence. And the other possible interpretation is the reason we have a common genetic code is not because we have a common ancestor, but because we have a common designer. I mean, that's quite plausible that that could be the answer as well. So the app says, have you ever considered that a common genetic code could be evidence of a common creator or a common designer rather than a common ancestor? Or have you ever read a book like Darwin's Doubt by Dr. Stephen Meyer, or Signature in the Cell by Dr. Stephen Meyer, or Icons of Evolution by Jonathan Wells, or even a new book, a relatively new book written by an atheist, by Thomas Nagel? I think it's called Mind and Cosmos. I have it here on my shelf somewhere where he, here it is. Yeah. This is the subtitle of his book, believe it or not. The book is called Mind and Cosmos, Why the Materialist Neo-Darwinian Concept of Nature is Almost Certainly False. This guy's an atheist because he sees the big holes in the materialist mindset and materialist worldview. So, in any event, this app is designed to give you quick answers. It's not going to be exhaustive. It's just going to get you started and allow you to give the other person you're talking to some food for thought and to allow them to see if they can back up their own claims. Now, with that being said, let me see what kind of questions or objections you might have. We'll start in Ithaca, New York, with Brett. That's the home of Cornell University. Brett, you're on with Frank Turk. Go right ahead, sir.
Are you just taking questions for evolution?
Oh, no, we can talk about anything, man. Go ahead.
Hell.
Yes.
Why do you believe in hell when there's no evidence whatsoever in everlasting hell? I mean, it's zero. So why do you I know you talk about it sometimes, about hell, and you believe in it. I'm sure you do. But why when there's no evidence? I mean,
Brett, how would you get evidence for an afterlife?
Yeah, exactly. So why would you believe it knowing that you don't have any evidence for it?
Hey, Brett, is this Brett Strong?
Yeah, it's Brett Strong.
Well, you're not in Ithaca. Why are you saying you're in Ithaca?
Yeah, I am.
I thought you were in Brooklyn.
No.
Oh, you're up there with Cornell.
Yeah, Cornell University.
Oh, I thought you were in Brooklyn for some reason.
No. I don't have a Brooklyn accent.
Well, that's true. Well,
I know you're from Jersey down the street, though, but yeah.
Quite obviously, Brett, in order to get evidence for an afterlife, you would need revelation. I mean, you could look at near-death experiences, and I don't know if you've seen any of the recent work out there on that. near-death experience by Eben Alexander. What's the name of that book? I got that book
is
on my shelf, too. What's that?
Is he a doctor?
He's the neuroscientist, yeah.
I hope you realize, you know, when you pull that one out the hat, I saw an article recently. I can't remember exactly the name of the article, but one of the head nurses in charge of over him basically said that it wasn't as the book said, like he was being fraudulent writing that book, that it wasn't as dire as he said it was.
Well, I don't know. I just started to read the book, so I'm not qualified to really speak on
it's
what.
It's been debunked already, you know. And they've asked him. He's basically hasn't said too much about it. But they basically said the book is basically a lie as far as how dire his situation was, with no signs that he.
Well,
did
okay.
Have
well, I haven't heard that, so I can't comment on it. But his isn't the only case. Quite obviously, there are scores of near-death experiences which show that naturalism is false. If you don't want to go to Revelation. Now, obviously, quite obviously, Revelation, if, say, the Bible is true, then that certainly is evidence that hell exists, because Jesus, who was God and claimed to be God and proved he was God, says there's a hell.
Yeah, but you can't even say that, Frank Turk, that Jesus proved he was God, when the first century, we don't have anything from Jesus the entire first century. So when you use the word prove...
Wait, Brett, how did you come to that conclusion?
Okay, ask any go to any university in the world, ask William Lane Craig, Dan Wallace, who's a textual critic, Bart Ehrman, they will all tell you, we don't have anything from the first century that has anything with Jesus' name on it. Nothing.
Well, Brett, hold on. What you're confusing there are manuscripts with testimony. We have testimony from the first century, but we don't necessarily have manuscripts from the first century, with the exception of a new one that, quite frankly, is in the first century that Dan Wallace will tell you about. But that's beside the point. That hasn't been actually published yet. We have testimony from the first century, but we don't necessarily have manuscripts from the first century. But that doesn't mean we don't have evidence from the first century.
So you're still in a assuming position and not fact. Because the fact is, I'm speaking fact, you're assuming. I'm saying fact, we don't have anything, and that's a fact. You're assuming there's some
person. Brett, hold on. Brett, please. You're making assertions without providing evidence. We have testimony from the first century. That's not even disputed among atheists. For example, the testimony from 1 Corinthians 15, verses 3 to 8, which is probably the oldest evidence in the entire Bible for the resurrection, even atheists, Brett, admit is prior to 40 A.D. That's not up for dispute. Okay? So the testimony is quite early. Now, do we have a manuscript that was written in 40 A.D.? No, we don't. We don't have the physical manuscript, but we have the testimony from that particular time.
Okay, how can you say that as far as it's written in the first century when the letter itself doesn't even date it? You have to assume that this letter was written in the first. It's all assumption. It's assumption that Paul wrote it. It's assumption is in the first century.
No, Brett, it is not assumption at all. Scholars who work on this, and let me point out, there is not one credible New Testament scholar, not one, that denies that Jesus existed, or that denies that, say, Paul existed and wrote 1 Corinthians in 55 or 56 A.D. Even Bart Ehrman agrees with this, Brett. Okay?
You know, Dale Martin is a friend of Bart Ehrman. He's a University of Yale prestigious ancient historian, and he said that there's a common joke in the university about Apostle Paul letters. They're like, well, who wrote Apostle Paul letter? Oh, Apostle Paul wrote it. Which Apostle Paul? And Dale Martin says, well, we just assume that it was this Apostle Paul, but we don't know because we don't have anything and we're not back there. So we're just assuming that Apostle Paul, that we think Apostle Paul wrote it. That's Dale Martin. You can watch it on YouTube lectures on Yale University.
Okay, Brett, yes. I said one credible scholar, and I don't know who you're talking about. But the point here is that you're going to have people talking... obviously, I have different opinions over different things when it comes to the New Testament documents, but it's quite well established that Jesus was an historical figure, and we do have testimony from the first century. That's not disputed among reliable, credible New Testament scholars. And you can just look at the evidence for yourself. We have the evidence that we put in our book. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. We've got eyewitness testimony throughout the New Testament documents. We have early testimony. We know that these documents are written down early. We know they put embarrassing details in there they wouldn't have made up. We know that many of the apostles went and died excruciating deaths for saying they saw what they saw when they could have saved themselves. Otherwise, we know there are extra biblical sources out there like Josephus, Tacitus, Suetonius, Thallus, Phlegon. These are people that give us little insights into what the apostles and the New Testament believers believed. We have Old Testament prophecy, which should get us to expect something like this happening in the first century. We even have enemy testimony. In other words, we have the Jews admitting the tomb is empty. We even have Jews becoming Christians. In fact, the early Christians were mostly Jews. So we've got very good evidence, Brett. So I highly recommend that instead of making assertions like this, you really look at the evidence and then make a decision. But don't just make these broad charges that can easily be refuted. Now, maybe we can talk again, but I got a lot of other calls I got to get to. Let me go to George in New Mexico. George, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Yes,
I was just going to ask you to invite some people that are non-believers, like the guy I just heard.
Mm-hmm.
And congratulations, because I was wanting to see this defense in motion, and I was just listening to it. And it's, congratulations. I'm a believer, and I was just wondering how, you know, if we could hear a real live exchange back and forth as to how you're handling this, and you did very well.
George, let me point out something. I don't always do very well, and nobody always does very well. I find myself forgetting asking the questions. I remember to ask the question of Brett, who's a nice guy. You know, how did you come to that conclusion? And he really didn't have an answer because there is no real good answer for it. But I find myself fumbling over these issues when I'm in a conversation, because, you know, as you know, George, conversations aren't always tidy, right?
Oh, yeah, I agree. Yeah, I'm same way, you know. I feel like I'm hanging on to a flagging shirt tail. You know.
No, I agree with you. That's why we developed this app, so you can have these questions right at your fingertips and these answers right at your fingertips. So do you happen to have a smart device of some kind you can download it?
I'm going to get one. I don't have one right now.
Okay.
Well, I got a computer, but
You might be able to download it on a computer. I don't know. I haven't tried it. I should probably see if I can put it on my own computer. Anyway, we're coming up to a station break. George, can you hang on through the break? Do you have a question?
I really don't. I just, you know, what I was asking about was already taken care of.
Oh, all right. Appreciate that, George. Well, thanks for calling in. You're listening to Cross Examine with Frank Turek on the AFR Talk Radio Network. We're talking about how to answer tough questions quickly. And there's a new app you can get that'll help you do that. We'll tell you more in just 2 minutes. Don't go away. If you're low on the FM dial looking for NPR, go no further. We're actually going to tell you the truth here. That's our intent anyway. If we don't, you can give us a call at 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. You're listening to Cross Examined with Frank Turek on the AFR Talk Radio Network. And I want to tell you that this coming Thursday on today's issues, I'll be on in studio with the great Tim Wildman, and we're going to be talking. What's that? And Jeff. Oh, Jim's answering something, saying it's something. Jeff who? Who? Which Jeff? Oh, Jeff Shambly. Oh, okay, cool. I didn't know I was going to have more than one person in the studio with me, so it'll be me.
Brother, you're important enough. We want to make sure you're well covered.
I'm important enough. Oh, well, thanks so much, Jim. I'm big in my own mind, right? So we're going to have myself, Tim Wildman, and Jeff Shambly in the studio at 10 a.m. Central, all the way to noon. And we're going to talk about I don't have enough faith to be an atheist, and we're going to give evidence that Christianity is true, and you can call in. So this coming Thursday, which happens to be September 26th, I believe it is, so tune in for today's issues this week. We're talking about our new app, And you can get it at our website, crossexamined.org. What we do here is we present evidence for Christianity. We cross-examine ideas against it. And this app gives you quick answers right at your fingertips, right there at your phone, right there in your iPad, right there on your Droid. You'll be able to interact with people, even though you might not have all these answers memorized. And so this app is free. It's easily downloadable. We just had about, in the past 30 minutes, we had about 30 people download it. So it's going quickly right now. So go to our website or the App Store and get it and see the quick answer section, because we're going through some of these answers today, questions and answers today. 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. If you want to join the conversation, let me go to John. John, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, sir.
Hi, Frank.
How you doing, John? Where are you, by the way?
Lawley, Florida.
Lawley, Florida.
Yes,
well,
sir.
Welcome. What's up?
Did you? The Bible says that how you answer questions is in Job 38, but that ain't what I was going to talk about. I want to talk about natural law, but Job 38 says that you answer, who is that that darkeneth counsel without knowledge? You got to have knowledge before you can answer questions. But anyway, natural law, I was wondering if anybody knew anything about natural law. I called the other day, and nobody knew nothing about it. And,
well, sure. Natural law is the law written on our hearts. If you're talking about the natural law that founded our country, you're not talking about the natural law like the laws of physics, right? You're talking about the natural law that founded our country, the fact that we have the moral law written on our heart, that kind of natural law, right?
Marriage. Marriage more of the direction that I wanted to go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, with regard to marriage and ethics, there is a natural law out there that even the Gentiles who do not have the law have the law written on their hearts. That's what Paul said in Romans chapter 2. Thomas Jefferson, of course, took that and put that into the Declaration of Independence when he said, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." You intuitively know basic right and wrong because God has written it on your heart, because you're made in the image of God, and if your conscience is clear, then you will have the thoughts of God when it comes to basic right and wrong. In other words, you don't need the Bible to know right from wrong. Everybody knows right from wrong. Oh, we may suppress it. We may deny it to go our own way, as Paul says in Romans chapter 1. But everybody intellectually knows basic right and wrong. And that's what the natural law is. Now, when it comes to marriage, I call marriage between a man and a woman natural marriage because it's based in nature. It's based in the fact that men were made for women, women were made for men. And only by a man and a woman coming together can you get a new human being. Men and women are compatible, and they need one another to procreate. And the reason that the government is involved in promoting natural marriage and not any other type of marriage, including same-sex marriage, is because marriage between a man and a woman perpetuates and stabilizes society. It is the ultimate form of government, the most basic form of government. And when that institution breaks down, it's like the foundational bricks in a building breaking down. The whole building comes down. And so if we equate any other relationship to the biological relationship of a man and a woman, what we are essentially saying about the institution of marriage is that marriage has nothing to do with children, that marriage is just about the romantic desires of adults. Well, the state has no stake or no reason to promote the romantic desires of adults. That's not the reason the state endorses marriage at all or promotes marriage at all. The reason the state promotes marriage is because it perpetuates and stabilizes society. And everybody benefits from that, even people who don't get married. The people that benefit the most, of course, are children. But when we say that men and women and women and women or men and men are all the same when it comes to their relationships, we're essentially saying that marriage has nothing to do with children. And if there isn't an institution devoted to children, if marriage isn't it, what is? So that's my little spiel on marriage and natural law.
Under marriage and natural law, when a woman has a baby from a man, and they're not married by law, and they haven't been married in the church, is that still that's still their mate? And whenever that mate leaves, or another male comes in and mates with that with that woman, then that's considered as adultery, right?
Yes. Well, even our common law recognizes that. There's a point where when a man and a woman live together and they have a child, there's a point where the state considers that marriage. The guy just can't walk away and not take care financially of his offspring or his mate there. So there's a point in our common law which even recognizes that. So if they don't go through a particular ceremony or even a ceremony with the state, that the state's going to recognize that one point as marriage. Now, is it marriage under the eyes of God? No. Well, now you're getting into theology here.
Yeah.
You know, typically we say that you ought to be married before your congregation, and you ought to get married in a church. And the reason the people come to your wedding is not because, obviously it's because they want to celebrate with you, but it's because they're witnesses of this, and they are there to support the marriage through thick and thin. That's one of the reasons they come to the wedding. At least that's one of the reasons they're supposed to come, is they're supposed to support you through the marriage.
One mate for life.
Well, that's the ideal. It doesn't always work out that way, and God knows that we're broken, and that's why even Jesus says that Moses knew that your hearts were hard and gave you the opportunity for divorce, even though God did not intend it to be that way. So, yes, the ideal is one husband or wife for eternity or for as long as you live, but it doesn't always, unfortunately, work out that way because we're broken people. Good question, John. Thanks for the call. Let me move on to Gary. And for those of you, by the way, that want to be on the program, it's 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. We're talking about any question you have on Christianity. And we're talking also about the questions and answers that we have in our new app that can help you answer people who bring up objections. Let me go to Gary, who's listening in Texas. Gary, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead.
Yeah, good morning.
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
I also want to congratulate you, like George did from New Mexico, with your first caller, because I tell you, I don't have that patience anymore. But I want to make three quotes here. I think it was Mark Twain, but I'm not sure. But I think he said something in the order of, "The vanity of knowledge builds a dam to an open mind."
Oh, that's interesting. The vanity of knowledge brings a dam to an open mind. And yet Paul would say something that knowledge puffs up, or at least it can.
Yes.
Now, that's not obviously an argument against getting smarter, because we're supposed to do that.
What I'm saying is, it's like the old saying goes, you know, some people with a little knowledge, they become dangerous or whatever.
That's right,
you know?
Yeah.
My dad used to say, it's what you learn after you know it all that counts.
It's what you learn after you know it all that counts.
Yeah, and then I've heard from somebody else, I can't remember who said it, but the more I learn, I have a lot more to learn.
Yeah, well, I think I can agree with that, because I tell you, the more and more I study, the more I realize I don't know. In fact, I could say that I learn more and more about the essentials, but there's so much about other things that I have no idea of. Was it Churchill or somebody like this who said, we're all ignorant, just in different subjects?
Yeah, I think I do remember him saying that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was in New Mexico just yesterday in Tucumcari, and I stopped off. They have a dinosaur museum there.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to the director for a while, and we were talking, and the director kind of carried on about things, and have you ever? You've probably heard of L.A. Marzulli.
Have not.
How about Steve Quayle?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay. Both of these gentlemen, they're Christians. They write books, and both of them have been talking a lot recently about giants and UFOs. You know, the Nephilim, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I told the director of this museum about. Steve Quayle lives in Montana now, but he's done studies on giants, and they have found in different Indian reservations, Hopis, Apache, you name it, all over the Southwest over here. And they have found giants that are as tall as 12 to as much as 18 feet tall. They have six fingers and toes, red hair, and the Indians have legends about these guys. Even they're big enough that they could chase after American bison, or some people call them buffaloes.
Hey, Gary.
And catch them like a rabbit.
Gary, before we go on, what's the point of this?
I really believe there's so much knowledge out there, and the evolutionists and all that, they don't want to listen to the legends and stuff, because it basically takes them out of their comfort zone, because their comfort zone is based on their own vanity. And I think one of the biggest things that we have insulted, we as a human race has insulted God, is not only as our Savior, but more so even as our Creator.
Yeah, no, I agree, Gary. But one of the biggest problems, I think, is the materialistic worldview, which presupposes that the only thing that exists are materials. So they've already ruled out intelligence before they've looked at the evidence. That's the fundamental problem. And no matter what the evidence shows them, they're never going to conclude that there was an intelligent designer or creator out there, because they've already ruled that possibility out in advance. In other words, they've rigged the game from the beginning. So no matter what they find in the fossil record, they're just going to say it supports evolution, even though it really doesn't.
I agree.
Gary, I'm sorry. I'm up against a station break. Thanks for the call. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. You're listening to Cross Examined with Frank Turek on the AFR Talk Radio Network. We're talking about quick answers to tough questions about Christianity and our new app. You need to get it at the App Store. Go get it. Back in 2 minutes. Saying, how do I find the app? Well, if you're on the App Store, just type in Cross Examined, two words, Cross Examined, you'll find it. But you can go to our website, crossexamined.org, and click on Media, and you'll see the little tab for the app there. It'll take you to where you need to go to download it on your iPad or your iPhone or your Droid device. So just go to our website. That's the easiest place, crossexamined.org. Click on Media. You'll see the app there. You'll also see other things on there, like our TV show and, of course, this podcast and some other good resources that can help you. So check it out right there. And if you want to get quick answers to tough questions, download the app and then click on the quick answers tab. That's what we've been talking about today. And let's go back to the phone lines. We'll go to Dylan listening in Dallas, Texas. Dylan, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead.
Hey, Frank. I just had a question about religious liberty. We kind of want to get your thoughts on that stuff coming out of New Mexico, you know, with the photographers not wanting to take the pictures of the lesbian ceremonies and things like that. I mean, it's obviously very disturbing. But I guess my question would be, what do you see that going? And I mean, as Christians, what could we do to, you know, I guess combat that? I mean, obviously we could maybe call our representatives, things like that, but it's sure disturbing to see people, you know, that judge, for instance, tell us that we need to, you know, the cost of citizenship is for us to, you know, suppress our beliefs so that, you know, we don't interrupt somebody else. I mean, I don't know. I guess, what are your thoughts on that? I mean,
well, my thoughts, I actually put in a column that's on the Christian Post. It's called Freedom, Another Casualty of the Gay Rights Agenda. And you can read about it right there. I won't go through the entire article. In fact, a couple of podcasts ago, we talked about this at length, and I had Jordan Lawrence on from the Alliance Defending Freedom, who actually argued the case before the New Mexico Supreme Court, which now I've learned that they are going to take to the United States Supreme Court. But the reason that we are losing our religious freedoms is precisely because the church has been silent. We have not been speaking up through Congress or by ensuring that the right people are appointed to these courts. We've been out of the game. And when you take godly people out of society, it's no wonder why the society goes godless. When you take godly people out of government, it's no wonder the government goes godless. We're the problem, Dylan, and I think we just need to get more involved. And if we don't get more involved, pretty soon we're going to lose our very right not only to live our faith, but simply to even preach the gospel. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I'd love to read that article. Thanks very much for taking my call.
All right. Well, thanks. Appreciate it, Dylan. Yeah, get involved. Call your congressperson. Call your representatives. Get involved locally. Get involved at the state level. Get involved at the federal level. Be engaged. In order to stay or to maintain freedom, it needs to be defended. By the way, before I forget, this weekend, coming weekend, not right now, but next weekend in Charlotte, there's a big apologetics conference. You need to know about it. It's called Truth for a New Generation. My friend Alex McFarland's putting it on. Truthforanewgeneration.com. Check that out. If you're anywhere near Charlotte, North Carolina, you want to attend. There's some great speakers who are going to be there. Truthforanewgeneration.com. And then a couple of weeks after that, there's another apologetics conference that I'll be emceeing along with Dr. Richard Land, the head of the of Southern Evangelical Seminary. You can get all the details for that at ses.edu. That's ses.edu. SES stands for Southern Evangelical Seminary.edu. That's another amazing apologetics conference here in Charlotte. All right, let me keep moving. We're going to Ellen in Arkansas. Ellen, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead.
Hi. I have a sister who is an atheist, and I haven't brought this up to her yet, but I have come across this question of evolution, and the people that come up with this are always, you know, talking about, well, they've got proof that evolution is this and evolution is that. And I said, well, you know, if man, you know, crawled out of the primordial ooze, mm-hmm. why isn't he still doing it? You know, okay, a scientific experiment has to be reproduced in order for it to be science.
Well, actually, Ellen, let me mention something here. There are two types of science, because you put your finger on something. There's empirical science, where you go in the laboratory and repeat something over and over again, and neither creation or evolution has ever been created or has ever been replicated in the laboratory. The second kind of science is what's called forensic science. And forensic science is when you look at historical data and try and take the historical data, put the clues together, and come up with an inference to the best explanation. Now, both evolution and creation are forensic sciences. In other words, we can't go in the laboratory and recreate them. You can't recreate macroevolution from the goo to you via the zoo in the laboratory. And you can't create the creation of the universe, obviously, or the creation of the first life in the laboratory. And if you did, by the way, it would prove creation. It would prove intelligence, because it took a lot of intelligence to do it. But, you know, I would back out all of that, Ellen, with your sister, and ask a couple of questions. The first question would be, if Christianity is true, would you become a Christian? Now, you ask that question because it clears away all the smoke that people put up to try and say that they're not Christians. All the smoke, all the intellectual fog, which really isn't intellectual at all, because I submit to you that most people who are not Christians because they don't want to be Christians. There's something going on in their life that they don't want to change, and they don't want to bow their knee to a creator. And so when you ask the question, if it were true, would you become a Christian? It exposes them and gets them to realize that maybe their objection is not intellectual, it's volitional. The second question I'd like to ask her is, let's suppose evolution is completely true. How does that disprove God? It doesn't.
Exactly.
It doesn't disprove God. You still need a creator to start the universe, a designer to design the universe, a creator and a designer to start the first life. You still need a God for objective morality, the laws of logic, the laws of mathematics, or something immaterial anyway, to have a mind out there that grounds all this stuff. You don't get it by atheistic materialism. In fact, I'm just writing a book right now on this, that the atheists are always stealing from God in order to make their case. They're stealing.
Right.
They're stealing an orderly world to say that God doesn't exist. Well, why is the world so orderly? It's obviously the product not of mindlessness, but the product of a mind. Behind reality is a mind. Now, you've got to do some more work to get to the Christian God, but it's quite obviously, in my view anyway, not randomness. In fact, you wouldn't even know what randomness was unless you knew what order was, and you wouldn't know what order was unless there was an orderer. There's got to be order out there. Why is there order in the universe? Why does science even work? Because there is order. So Right. Atheism, in fact, let me put it this way, Ellen. I am more certain that atheism is false than I am that Christianity is true. And I'm very certain Christianity is true.
Right. Because one other question for you.
Yeah.
And this is just for my personal knowledge, and that is, where can I find that God cares for me personally?
Where can you say that again? Where can I find what?
Where can I find that God cares for me personally? I know John 3:16, God so loved the world.
Right.
But, okay, well, that's a collective world. How about me personally?
Well, yeah, you're part of the world, though. And so the world means believers, and actually it means unbelievers, too. God loves everybody. But in John 1, he says he's given us the right to become children of God. And it, if you read 1 John 2, it talks about God is love. And obviously a loving being would love his creation, and we're his creation. So God does love us individually. Just read 1 John. You could read the Gospel of John and, of course, 1 John as well. And I'm sure Paul, although since I'm on the radio, my IQ drops at least 50 points. I can't think of another verse from Paul that says this, but I know it's in there. So it's in fact, if you hang up and don't hang up, I'll put you on hold and we'll get Ellen, we'll get your email address and I'll email you some references. Is that okay?
Yeah, great.
Okay, so hang on and Jim will take your email address and then let me make sure I put you on hold and then I'll email you some references. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Ellen. God bless. All right, let me squeeze in one more here. Let me go to Richard in Alma, Arkansas. Richard, you're on with Frank Turk. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'd like your take on paradise. For example, in Luke 24:43, and Jesus said to him, "Surely I say to you, you will be with me in paradise."
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's another paradise when he talks about Lazarus and the rich man.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard preachers say that paradise is the third heaven, and then I've heard them say that it's in Abraham's bosoms in the center of the earth. It's sort of contradictory. My thinking is he can't go. Jesus went to the center of the earth where hell is supposedly is, and then he had to take the blood and put it on the altar in heaven, and that the people in hell was raised and their sins were paid for by the blood on the cross, and then they ascended and went to the third heaven. Now, some say there is the paradise is in third heaven and not in Abraham's bosom in the center of the earth. What's the conflict there? Can you straighten that up for me?
Well, that's a great question, Richard, and I don't know if I'll even have time to do it in the minute we have left, but actually, in Christian theology, if you look at Luke 16,
yeah.
People really aren't in heaven and hell yet because that's the final state. There's an intermediate state that we go to if we were to die now before Christ comes. We're absent from the body but present with the Lord, but we don't have our glorified bodies. We're not physical, and so we're not quite in our final state yet. And heaven, or hell, I should say, is called Hades.
Yeah.
And it's not the final state yet. Satan and his demons are going to be cast into the lake of fire, and that's the final state. But we're not in the final state yet, and so we'll have to pick this up another time. Sorry, Richard, we ran out of time.
Okay, thank you very much.
But thank you very much. And let me point out to Ellen, Jim just reminded me about the hairs on the head that Jesus talks about. You know, he cares about the sparrows. He's going to care about you. He knows every hair on your head. And there are other verses, too. I'll email you. Thanks. I'm Frank Turek, friends. Talk to you next week. God bless.